And whilst there's loads of information out there about hauntings and even famous hauntings, but 9 times out of 10, you know, most of these things, there's nothing really there. We're looking at, you know, we're looking at subjective evidence and people's mental health as well. And that's kind of some of the things that we want to cover.
Welcome to the Deadly Departed podcast, where the veil between the living and the dead is just a whisper away. I'm Jock, and along with my colleagues in Paranormal Daily News, we will be your guides through the shadowy realms of the paranormal and the unexplained. In each episode, we will dive into the eerie and the enigmatic with the help of today's leading experts in parapsychology, science, and the supernatural. Prepare to uncover the secrets that lurk in the dark and explore the mysteries that defy explanation. Let's embark on this journey now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jock here. This is Deadly Departed. I'm here with my my colleague, my brother in arms, Craig, science editor, Weiler of PDN. Craig, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Jock. It's still morning here in California. I know it's afternoon for you, so yes. We're quite a ways apart here, and. Yeah, I'm fresh and ready to go. Let's get into it.
We were going to do another episode before. We were going to do something before, but I decided that I didn't have it. If you can see, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening on the podcast, you're not going to see it. But if you're watching YouTube, I've got a nice short high and tight haircut. Now, if I'd have done this episode the other day, I was complaining to my wife because I felt I was like a cockatoo, where my one bit of my crown was sticking up like a Mad Hatter. It wouldn't have gone down well. But now that we're freshly shaved and freshly ready, I'm ready to talk about it. And anyway, so what are we talking about, Craig? We're talking about hauntings.
We're gonna deal with hauntings today. We're gonna look at several different aspects of it. So I'm bringing in expertise as a general building contractor. So I know houses as well as anybody out there. And Jock has experience in haunting. And so we, you know, between the two of us, I think we have a lot to discuss here.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that we want to cover as well is maybe some of the myths and that most times people actually haunt themselves. And whilst there's loads of information out there about hauntings and even famous hauntings, but 9 times out of 10, you know, most of these things, there's nothing really there. We're looking at, you know, we're looking at subjective evidence and people's mental health as well. And that's kind of some of the things that we want to cover. And also, one of the things that I want to cover, Craig, that people hate me for saying this as well, but Lloyd Auerbach is a proponent of this too, is there is no such thing as a ghost detector or a ghost app, really, that actually detect ghosts. So this is one of the myths that I want to bust. There's nothing out there that can detect a spirit or detect a ghost. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, if that's really what you wanted to hear, no. So we're going to jump into that as well. So, Craig, let me talk about, let's talk about maybe hauntings is there any hauntings around you? Has there been any big hauntings around your way?
I don't normally get into hauntings myself. I'm in and out of a lot of people's homes, and generally I can get a feel for the space. I was in a large mansion nearby for several months, and
Did it feel haunted?
No, it didn't feel haunted, but I could feel the presence of the previous occupants. They were some rather well-known people, and the family life I knew to be a bit in turmoil, and you could feel that in the house. Just the general energy of the place was uncomfortable. Part of my work was taking all the uncomfortable stuff out and throwing it away, literally.
So let's look. There's a lot of hauntings. There's a lot of famous hauntings. There's the hauntings in Connecticut. We've got hauntings of places, we've got hauntings of people, and we've got hauntings, trying to say that one in Scottish accent, of things, right? Everything that we know about, at some point someone has said is haunted. We've got one of the greatest probably examples of hauntings is the Enfield Poltergeist, which we can talk about Poltergeist in a little bit, but Enfield case in London. We've also got cases in Connecticut. We've got the case that I covered, which is in PDN in Pennsylvania. And then we've got demonic cases that have sprouted up everywhere. We've got a case in Gary, Indiana, which was supposed to be a demonic haunting. And here's the thing that we notice about these. There's either real objective phenomena that happens in a haunting. And what I mean by that, ladies and gentlemen, is that the phenomena is out with, I don't want to say out with science, but it can be experienced outside of the human persona, outside the human form. You can see it with your own eyes. You can experience it with your senses, your hearing. And then, of course, you've got that subjective phenomena, which is internal. You know, you can have that kind of clairvoyance or that sense, that feeling inside of you. But there's very few cases that exist in the world where there's been serious objective type phenomena. There's been cases of poltergeist cases where there has been objective phenomena. And the reality is that when it's subjective, we need something that we can measure. I mean, one of the big cases that we all know about, that, you know, Ed and Lorraine Warren probably launched themselves, was the Amityville case. And then, of course, you have the Conjuring cases. But there's lesser known cases as well. There's actually one that's recent here. Not recent, well, maybe recent in early 2000s. And there's a ghost cat that just came behind you. We've got cases here in North Carolina. There's haunting cases everywhere. And the stories are remarkable. There's historical basis to a lot of these things. But what exactly is a haunting? What really is a haunting? What is a haunting to you?
Well, you know, when you're talking about hauntings, there are, you know, you're talking about evidence, right? And so there is evidence that's personally convincing, and there's evidence that is objectively convincing. But like you were saying, you know, something that somebody experiences versus something that somebody can measure. And these are two different things. So when you say haunting, I think it can be either a subjective experience or an objective one. I think both are valid in their own ways, because we don't really know what people actually experience. We can't get inside their minds and see it in their own eyes. So, you know, it's about a person's credibility at that point, and that's sometimes very hard to judge. So, you know, is a lot of this wishful thinking? Probably. You know, it's sexy in its own way to have a haunting.
It is, and there's a lot to be said for in the public eye, and certainly there's a lot to be said for in the media, where the media portrays hauntings as this massively scary thing. And, you know, it's always, here's the thing, and I remember people think hauntings are this that you mentioned, a mansion. Is you have this idea of this scary looking house, and it's dark, and it always happens at night. And I often laugh, because I think, why do people have to go and visit at night when literally phenomena can happen at any time of the day? And a haunting doesn't necessarily just happen at night. I think the reality is that we perceive things a lot easier at night, because there's less noise, there's less environmental information coming from all over. That's the time when it's quiet. I don't necessarily think that any haunting particularly happens in the evening or at night. And people need to understand as well that for the most part, a lot of hauntings that are investigated, there's a scientific basis for them, and not everything is actually preternatural or supernatural. It's not always a demon, and it's not always a grounded spirit. Now, and there's also a big case for what people perceive and think is a haunting is really has got a natural explanation to it. So I let me jump into this, because I think a lot of things that happen in the construction field can often make things seem like they're haunted, and people pick this up.
Well, absolutely. You know, first of all, houses are a little bit on the noisy side, and you don't really pick this up unless you're actually listening for it. And there are lots of reasons for this. You can have pipes under the house banging as soon as you turn on the water. It's usually a fairly easy sound to discern, but if you have no idea what that is, and you have things happening outside of your home that can cause it, you know, you have no way of knowing. But for example, if somebody's working on the water down the street, you know, a utility company, you might get noises from that inside your house and not even know it because they're nowhere near you. They're on another street someplace else. So this can create something inside your house. There's also, you know, small animals, but generally people know what those sound like. And people expect rats and they expect squirrels. Even the occasional raccoon can get into a home. So people generally expect that, so they don't really attribute that to supernatural things. But, you know, some of the other things, like a house can just do a knock, just a large pop for no reason. And you don't really know why or when it occurs because it's completely random. Usually, though, these things are attributable to temperature changes, and it's just kind of a nail pop where the wood expands, it pops, it shrinks, the nail goes back in, it expands, it pops again. And so you have this like recurring thing that only occurs during temperature changes, which you're not even aware of. So,
and you know, it reminds me of the possibility that people don't realize their houses get old just as we all get old. And with that, that means that your house is going to degenerate and there's going to be movement. And so really when we experience a haunting, like we mentioned at the beginning, you're experiencing something that's objective or subjective. You're experiencing what you can hear, see, and feel. And everything that we do is all obviously internal. So when something happens in the external environment that you're not used to, and you start to even get potential. So let me explain this. You can have, and I've been in a case where they thought there was a demon involved, and they could smell putrid odors and putrid smells, and they were thinking, wait a minute, there's something not here. And most of the time when people are calling out for hauntings, they have an interest in the paranormal, or they have an interest. So the first thing that I'm doing if I go in anywhere, get called out anywhere, is I find out is what is their motivation, right? What is the motivation behind this? Because 9 times out of 10, you find that they've got an interest. I'm more interested in somebody who's skeptical. I went to a case in Scotland where they were totally skeptical, but the phenomena they were experiencing was just beyond any kind of scientific explanation. So that's more interesting because you don't have a belief there, but a lot of cases people have a belief. And if they're watching, and what I'm getting at is if they're watching a show on, and this is where the media comes in, if they're watching a show and they talk about part of the signature, the sign of maybe having a demonic infestation would be smelling a putrid smell, immediately they connect that and they think that there's something there. And then if they've got something going wrong in their life, they attribute that to the haunting. Before you know it, they've haunted themselves. But the reality is maybe there's a dead animal has got into the building, has rotted, and that's what you're smelling. Or alternatively, you can have material that is outside that is creating some kind of odor. Could be some kind of chemical reaction or something, and all of a sudden that's what they attribute. They don't know what it is. They've got an interest. And so they think the noise that they hear, the smell that they smell, or even this feelings of drafts and cold temperatures dropping, they attribute them to a haunting because they often want the haunting. They often are more inclined to believe it because they already have an interest in the field. And so most hauntings that you investigate in this day and age has got a scientific basis. And as Craig's saying, in his game in the construction industry, a lot of these phenomena that is similar to what a haunting experience would be really is maybe something to do with just the local environment, smelling the smells. And I think belief is plays a massive role when you think.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I'm picking up a rotting smell inside of a house. It's probably a sewer smell, which is a very, very particular type of smell. And that can be caused by so different factors. The most common one I've run into is somebody has not run a sink in a year or so. So the water has been sitting in the trap for a long time, dried out, and allowed the sewer gases to get inside the house. It's a really simple thing. And then the smell will just sort of drift around and you can't really pinpoint it. But if you start walking around and turning on the water and then turning it off again, you fill up those traps and the smell goes away. Another way this can happen is if you have an old sewer line that breaks underneath, and then you also have an air conditioning or heating system where you have the vents underneath the house. And if those are also broken, then as soon as you turn on the system, you are blowing the sewer smell from underside the house right into your home. You have no idea where this is coming from. These things are possible, and they have to be considered as ordinary causes. And you can usually tell because the sewer smell is very particular. It's unlike anything else.
You know, it's interesting. I went to one case once where they said that they had experienced their building, their bed moving, the floors, the building shaking. And they had immediately thought, you know, this was demonic, this was a haunting. When you investigated it and you actually looked at the geological, you know, what happened in the area, it turned out that there was a very small seismic shift in the rocks or whatever they call it, geology or whatever. That's what created it. It's always important that you have to look for a scientific explanation for what someone thinks is a haunting. And also what I want to kind of understand, I know this is kind of, we're being kind of, I know, skeptical about hauntings, and we'll get on to what makes a real haunting later, but let's just bust all these myths and everything just now, because here's the other thing. Most people will haunt themselves, and it could be by their nutrition, by the drugs that may be taken. There's well-known pharmaceuticals out there that people use for inflammation that create psychotic episodes. Some drugs, you know, make you forget what you're doing. And so before you know it, you think you're haunted or you think that something's going on. And also, people, you've got to remember that some products that you take can make your think differently. And so becomes the essentially what you're putting into your body can also create that haunting. This before we get into even haunting, you know, getting into any mental health problems. But this is one of the other things that you have to look at is what is your, not only your medical back, you know, what is your medical history, but what have you been taking recently? And that even goes for some holistic natural products that do have an effect on you. Do they take CBD? Do you take anything? Like, are you taking, you know, wacky backy and having a little smoke? Before you know it, things like this could... So there's a lot of myths to do with hauntings. 99% of what people claim as a haunting is really has a natural explanation. And especially, of course, you understand that there's energy that surrounds us all the time. And some of the things that you see energetic could be lights that are created, could be from magnetic forces, from other combined forces in the environment that create, you know, some kind of phenomena. And that also has to have an explanation. And also, obviously, what most people see, it's a big thing for me, Craig, as well, is pareidolia. Most people that see something, they create something in their mind from it and then immediately think it's demonic. I remember when 9/11 happened, there was an image, a photo that went around that said that the devil or demon was shaped in the smoke. And the reality was pareidolia. There was no evidence for it. There has to be evidence. There has to be a pattern of empirical evidence, objective and subjective, I believe, personally, objective and subjective, that maybe goes into showing that there's something that's worth investigating. But most hauntings are really have got an explanation, unless you're looking at, you know, cases from the past where there has been really objective phenomena. So most people, I think, haunt themselves.
Okay. First of all, would you excuse me for just a second? I have a cat that needs to leave the room.
I'm about so, that cat's gone, Craig, is it?
The cat is gone now. Kicked him out of the room. So you, what I wanted
could
to
have
talk
about wound everybody up and said that was a spirit that was knocking. The Craig's office is haunted.
Yes, it's haunted by a white cat. an angel in disguise, who knows? Anyway,
yeah.
What I wanted to talk about here was one of the things about drugs is you have to know what sort of interaction the drug is having, because there are drugs that suppress the part of the brain that is the normal logical part. And when you do that, you are not necessarily opening yourself up to a hallucination, but you simply opened up the part of your mind that is liminal and can be receptive to this stuff. So you would have to know what the medicine is doing before you can make any of these judgments. Because sometimes people can take something that opens them up to something that actually is there. Of course, we would have no way of knowing unless there's veridical details. But, you know, I think that has to be taken into consideration.
I know of cases where there's a drug that people take when they're at university or something like that, and they're trying to keep awake. And do you know the name of it?
Meth.
Anybody out there who's ever been on this? If you're a lawyer, I mean, I've connected with lawyers caffeine, but it's a drug that they take, right? But I don't know if it's ketamine. But no matter what, whoever's listening out there, I can't remember the name. It's because I've had a haircut; it's probably gone out. I can't remember the name, but I know people take it. They want to keep awake. They want to keep alert, right? And it's like a caffeine, but it's a really strong drug. Now, I know for a fact that I've been in touch with people who have taken this, and they start to see things that are not there. So they actually start to have visions, and what they think is a clairvoyant vision or a haunting vision is, in fact, the side effects of what they're taking, that drug that they're taking. And so you have to be aware that some of these drugs will actually make you experience things externally to you that may actually be the cause of that haunting. I'm not going into psychosis or schizophrenia or anything like that just now, but some of these drugs will actually make you see things that are not there, and obviously give you that kind of psychotic features, borderline. And even if you've had psychedelics, I know people who have taken psychedelics that initially then think they've had a bad experience and they think they're haunted because they've come out of that psychedelic experience and it didn't go well, and then all of a sudden their mind is going overdrive. And they think then, because they've been in that experience, that they have been infested, they've been possessed or something like that. And that's not normally the case.
It is a complicated issue. And, you know, one of the challenges of this is that it tells us how the brain works, which is that we experience reality internally. As we go through our lives and we deal with the reality that's external to us, we are creating it in our minds as we go. Now, when we touch something, we're getting feedback, but also this isn't just feedback from something physical. It's an interpretation of signals that we're getting. The brain is constantly interpreting this stuff. The mind is creating patterns from these things and making sense of them and stabilizing all of it to give us our worldview. So when you talk about these haunting experiences and stuff, they are an addition to what we're normally creating. So we're creating our reality in our mind, and it's an addition to it. And even though it doesn't make sense, it's really hard to say it's not real when we're literally creating the rest of it out of our minds as well. It's all coming from the same spot. And we're so this this idea of something being imaginary is really just a personal reality. So it all gets really, really fuzzy in there.
And it's important as well, Craig, is that anybody who's certainly if I go out to help with a potential case investigation and they tell me what they're experiencing, I'm not going to say it's not true, right? Because one, that's not creating any trust or anything. But of course, as you rightfully say, what their experience is subjective and it's internal to them. So who are you to judge them? You've just got to educate them and start to work through, okay, potentially, could it be this? Could it be this? You know, what are you on? Often bringing in a psychologist, a psychiatrist, depending on what the case is. It's important that you respect what the person is going through, but at the same time, understand that there is no real evidence of anything that is untoward. There's very few cases that have real phenomena that can be measured, or that don't have an explanation. I mean, there are a number of cases, of course, that do have that. But most people that are haunted, they're doing it themselves. I'm a great believer in that most people haunt themselves through their experiences or their ignorance, or of course, you know, reading a book on something that's mainly paranormal or covers these hauntings, or is in the TV. If you've got an interest in it, then you're going to believe, or you're going to want to have this type of haunting. So let's jump into a little bit of what really constitutes a haunting. So science is all about what we can measure, and
yes,
and that's the same in any potential haunting scenario, is what we can measure. And this kind of brings me into this whole idea now, as an individual who's worked in the construction game, you've utilized probably, you know, electromagnetic meters, you've probably utilized thermal cameras and all sorts of your type of work. And this is the same stuff that we're labeling, or people are labeling, as ghost detectors, haunted locations. And when we come to understand what a haunted location is, or a haunted person, or a haunted home, it's a little bit different to, I think I maybe want to ask this, anybody that is a haunting, is a battlefield haunted? Is where something has happened, does it mean that it's haunted? Not necessarily. In my mind, you know, we have a phenomena, residual energy plays itself. We've got stone tape theory, where the energy is imprinted into the object, and therefore the energy plays itself. And therefore, is it haunted? Because for me, a haunting would have some kind of intelligence, right? And maybe that's how we're getting now into maybe the idea of poltergeist phenomena. There has to be some kind of intelligence about it. So for me, more or less, if there's no intelligence, it's more or less residual energy or stone tape theory, something like that, like the Battle of Gettysburg, you know, big haunted battlefields. Even phenomena, energy phenomena that's picked up in Scottish battlefields, you know, Culloden, for instance, that I went there and had a really unique experience, actually, years and years ago. But is it haunted? I probably, back then, I would have said yes, because I was naive to what really the science and everything else was after it. Now, as my journey has, I would say, no, not necessarily. For me, a haunting has to have some kind of intelligence. And I think that's important to understand.
Well, let's talk about this part for a moment, because I think some of the evidence from psychic experiments can shed some light here. And what I think one of the most important things is that over a number of years, both in Russian and in American parapsychology, they're trying to figure out if electromagnetic waves of any sort at all were responsible for telepathy. And what they found was that telepathy or remote viewing, all of this stuff worked regardless of any electromagnetic waves. In other words, they played absolutely no part in the ability of telepathy. So what you can derive from that is that something else is going on that's not electromagnetic waves, which gets back to you saying that, you know, when you have these EMF meters and stuff where you're measuring where you're measuring different things like that in the room, these don't tell you that you have a ghost, because a ghost, because telepathy isn't using electromagnetic waves.
No.
Whatever is creating ghosts isn't electromagnetic waves. It's something else. There is the intelligence, as you say, consciousness, yeah, whatever you want to call it, isn't necessarily measurable. But that doesn't mean that we can't detect it with our minds. It could be that it's not electromagnetic. It's still occurring in the natural world, but in a way that we don't understand.
That's important.
Go ahead.
I love that idea, because it is actually to do with the mind. But what I would say as well is that whilst we can't really identify any spiritual presence by measuring these things, I think what's important to say is that if we use those tools, we can create the scenario where the atmosphere has changed, something has changed it warrants investigation, not that it's a ghost or it's a spirit. And I think it's important that you can utilize these tools just to monitor the atmosphere and to give you a key to, I can go down this route, I can investigate this more because something has changed that we don't understand. I don't think, and rightfully as you say, we really, the power of the mind is phenomenal. And in telepathy, we can't necessarily measure it unless we're measuring the results from it, because we don't know how it really happens. It's not from any particular wave source, any particular energy that we can label. It's this mind-to-mind connection, which is fascinating.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you take that and you look at hauntings and stuff, what you're left with is something that is not electromagnetic waves that is leaving an impression behind that people are picking up on, which is the stone tape theory.
Yep.
So when you have an area with very strong emotions, a physical area with very strong emotions, I can understand the idea that those emotions and the whole drama that played out there can get into physical matter. And we know this. We know that information like that can be stored in physical matter because we have psychic abilities that involve grabbing a physical object and getting information from it. That normally
psychometry,
yeah, that information that can't normally be obtained, right? So psychometry has been basically demonstrated. So what we're talking about here is picking up on something that normally you can't measure, and if perhaps someday we will be able to measure it, but it won't be electromagnetic waves. And you know, this can be what hauntings are, that some people can sense this stuff, and other people have it shut down, which also works with parapsychology theory, that most of our energy is devoted towards shutting stuff out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's an excellent reason why hauntings would affect one person and not the other. It's just some people are better at shutting it out than others.
Some people are more susceptible to it. And I think I get more interested when there's more than one person that is actually sensing the same phenomena or witnessing mm-hmm. the same phenomena. Because there are times when, here's the thing, and I've had this discussion a few times. They'll say, well, you can go into a potential poltergeist case and things will be thrown around the room or objects will move. There's some kind of psychokinetic energy that will move. And I understand that. We can turn around and say, well, that could be the atmospheric energy. We have to measure that. There's There's so much that we need to understand that could be. But if there's intelligence behind it, if there's a pattern to that intelligence, that makes me think, okay, there's something more to this that goes beyond what we can experience in the scientific world, or what we can actually say this is science. I also refer to maybe a case where my good friend Richard Gallagher, Dr. Gallagher, who went to a possession case and actually witnessed phenomena that was out with science, just could not measure it. There was no explanation for it. So we can't really measure that. We can, but other people can witness that at the same time. So then you know that it's not just connected to one mind. There is something that is there, some force, that is intelligence behind it, that's able to interact in the material world. Mm-hmm. That then is more interesting, and to me is more, okay, we've got something. This is a potential, what I would say is a haunting. This is something that we can get our teeth into and start to investigate. So it's important to understand intelligent patterns is what we're looking for.
Yes. But I think if you have, you know, sometimes the pattern isn't intelligent, it's just something on repeat. I know some hauntings are that way. And I think that's when we're
like
dealing
a battlefield.
With a situation. I'm sorry, what?
Like a battlefield, like the like something like they see, people see over and over again, the energy replays itself.
Yes.
Residual energy.
Yeah, and I think that not only can that be read, but as that you constantly bring people in to experience this energy, that you're probably reinforcing it. That, you know, as everybody draws their attention to this energy, it helps hold it there and doesn't allow it to dissipate. And also, you know, these areas, for example, battlefields, don't get changed. I know for a fact when I go into a house and I'm working on a specific area, I am changing the energy of it.
Yeah.
This is something I've seen in this old house I was working on, for example. I was ripping out carpets and pulling down old wallpaper. And as I was doing that, I could feel the energy of the house lift. There was a lot of energy stuffed in these old materials. They also stank. So, you know, definitely the smell improved, but there was also the energy along with that. And as you sweep up all the old dust and all this old stuff and vacuum up the area and clean, you know, wipe things down, everything started to feel better. And it wasn't just, like I said,
you're changing the energy, the vibration in the place.
Yeah, you're taking some of this old energy out of the house physically, and then the place changes. In addition to, obviously, you know, smell and all that kind of thing, which definitely will not help the energy of a house at all.
I feel, Craig, that this is going to be like a second and a third part series to this, because we could go really deep. Like, even now I'm thinking, right, you know, we're going for 40 minutes here, but there's going to be more. So I think what we need to do, ladies and gentlemen, is we need to do a couple of parts to this, because there's so much to unpack, there's so much to discuss in this, and even how hauntings happen. And, you know, how we can really understand them. And so, you know, kind of getting back to what you're saying in terms of the energy that is displaced or the energy that is replayed over and over again, what is it that you feel is important to know? Because some people will go to a battlefield, will go to a place and not even experience anything. Yet there can be multitudes of people that will go and they will say that they're experiencing something, whether that energy has played over or they're open to it. What do you think is going on?
So you asked me what I would say to people. And I would say this, that there are going to, let's assume that the battlefield has the energy, that people are picking it up, and that all of that is real. If you're not experiencing it, it can just be that you are of a personality that has successfully lowered the level of psychic information around you so that you can function better in other areas. So this isn't necessarily a bad thing that you're not taking this energy in. It's a matter of everybody being a little bit different and having different strengths and weaknesses. So not experiencing this stuff can just mean that your psychic defenses are really good, but you don't get to choose where they're good at. You can't just suddenly turn them off. They're either going to be on or they're going to be off. And when you have people that have lower defenses against this psychic information, yes, they get to experience this stuff, but there's also drawbacks to that in their own lives. Taking in information easily from other people is not always a good thing, as I'm sure you can imagine. So,
yeah, absolutely. And there can be bias in it because you can have people that have expectations of what they're going to experience. I know for a fact that many, many years ago, when I was in Scotland, I went on a ghost tour. And I knew it was just a bit of fun, and I kind of knew everybody that was experiencing something. They were all ready for it. They were all primed for it. They were expecting it. So where I was kind of more skeptical, I didn't really experience anything, but they did. They experienced an awful lot. I'm less crazy because obviously you set yourself up, and of course there's that whole idea of you're going to a battlefield, you're going to somewhere that's haunted, you have an expectation of it. This is where I want to bring in something that's important. I was involved in a case in the north of Scotland where the guy that called us out was totally skeptical, didn't believe in it, neither did the wife. And they moved into a home and they experienced phenomena. And the phenomena was objective. The washing machine would turn on, there's usual things, lights on and off. Things would get moved, you know, as we would call them, maybe a porch and things like that. But he actually objectively, and so did his wife, actually saw figures, spirit. And that's what made him call. Now, he wasn't primed. He wasn't a believer. He was really skeptical about everything. But what he witnessed was strong enough that it instilled in him a little bit of fear, a little bit of, you know, what the hell is going on here, that he had to start investigating and make moves. And that's when we came in. And so I think there's more to be said for someone who's skeptical or someone who's not primed for these experiences to experience it and also have it witnessed.
That makes it more formidable.
Absolutely. And it makes it more formidable. And that's when you've got something serious. So there's a lot of myths around hauntings. There's a lot of myths around what it takes. And we're not even getting into that, you know, how it happens. But there's other myths that we need to understand as well, is that hauntings can also be created, and this is a bit of a myth as well, because of certain frequencies that are being used by, you know, it could even be as simple as cell towers or military operations that are going on that can cause, you know, a disturbance in the ether, if you like, or in, so whatever's going on around in your area, that's another thing you need to look at. It's not necessarily a haunting. There's maybe something that's going on that you don't know about. And that could actually be creating this phenomena.
That's an interesting point. And one of the things that kind of blew my mind quite a while ago was when I was looking into scientific evidence for astrology, that there are, you know, that there are effects from the moon. There is an actual witching hour. But yep. It's not on regular time. It's on galactic time, I guess, because when the center of the galaxy is visible in the sky for a certain amount of time, I think it's like for a half an hour or something, psychic ability jumps up like four times. I think it's called LST, but there's like this entirely different time frame based upon where the galaxy is in the sky. And these things, that sort of thing can affect us tells you that there's forces out there. Again, we're talking about things that are, we normally can't measure, but that there are forces working that are beyond our understanding and knowledge that can affect how much we're getting boosted in or dampened in terms of our ability to perceive. That these things happen without us having any conscious knowledge of it.
You know, when you think back to ancient civilizations and you think back to even Druids in the culture in Scotland and Native Americans and African tribes and foreign tribes, you know, they put a great deal of emphasis on lunar energies. You know, I'm not, my wife is more of a bit of an expert on astrology and stuff like that. I mean, I don't understand half of that. I mean, don't understand any of that stuff. But I do know that there's an element, and you're right, there's an element of these energies that have weird effects. And this is interesting. And I wonder, it may even be good research. It could be a good psychic research, actually, or ESP research into women's monthly cycles or women's men, you know, when they go through the menopause, because their lunar, that changes them in some way. I wonder if that even makes them, I know we're jumping off from hauntings, but you never know. Women can be haunted. I mean, some of them are screaming crazies as well at that when they're going through menopause and stuff like that. So you can imagine that these energies affect them. And I wonder if it actually makes them more heightened to phenomena and experiencing that phenomena because of their cycles and, you know, lunar stuff. Here's two guys talking about this is a bit weird. I know it is. We need another woman.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, my wife's getting into her 60s. I'm not going to touch this with a 10-foot pole.
This is
really, I'm not going to have to be on this whatsoever. No. This is,
no,
off,
I know.
This is off my table. I am not touching into women's issues at all.
This is where we needed to bring someone that we know who's also like a parapsychologist that's a woman that's gone through the menopause and gone through all these that we can talk about, because this is just weird that's going into it. But I do think though, right, going back into hauntings, maybe there's an explanation for some phenomena that they experience, because a lot of women experience these hauntings, and I found that it's only been a few men that have kind of called. It's normally always a woman who's trying to message and call us out for some kind of problem. There's very, very few males that do that. So I wonder if that has anything to do with maybe the phenomena they experience in their homes as well.
Well, women have more connections in between the two halves of their brain than men do. So they were probably, this leads me to believe that they're probably able to better hold their mental logical focus and experience these things at the same time, because those connections are better for them than they are in men. So I would expect them to do better. Whereas with men, you'll flip over from one side to the other, because the two sides don't really talk to each other as well. So you're either going to
are you saying that we're a little hey, are you saying that we're a little bit more backward than women now? Just be careful what you're saying now.
Well, you know, women are probably a little bit more sensible than men and a little less extreme most of the time. That's been my my experience.
Oh, that was a good balance that you struck right there, Craig, I can tell you. we'll need to get some female investigators on here that we can talk to as well. I do think it's something worth researching. I do think and as we're talking about kind of the myths of hauntings and things like that, I think that's something that needs to be understood as well, is biological cycles. Certainly for females, and who knows, maybe there's something to do with the moon and guys as well. Maybe we have a mad experience with certain lunar eclipses and things like that. God knows, I don't know. But there's
we're just better at explaining it away.
You know what's interesting as well? I found there was increased and this is weird, there was increased hauntings or reports of hauntings during COVID.
I would expect that, mostly because people are more confined to their spaces and more aware of what's going on around them rather than being caught up in a busy life, which would tend to dampen your ability to experience
absolutely.
These things.
And it goes back to my theory that they kind of haunt themselves a little bit and a lot of these experiences. And I also have to wonder again, like, and not that I'm getting into anything political, or because I'm not that way inclined, but some of the vaccinations is out there. We don't know if that had any kind of other type of effect that may have exacerbated what you perceive or what you feel. So that's a potential as well. That's interesting. And here's the other thing is that illness can often bring on, and I'm not going into mental health because I want to do a whole subject, another episode on that whole thing, but illness can also bring about potential experiences, haunting experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about what happens with your kidney. If your kidneys start to fail, or if you start to have issues with certain systems in your body, you can start to experience things differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The interaction of the body and the brain is in terms of your experiences, you know, they know physically what's happening, but it not necessarily in terms of how you're going to experience something, because science really can't measure an experience. It can only take note of it. So, you know, these things are in the realm of possibility. It's just, it's another one of those, well, that was interesting. More study is needed.
You know, that's where one of the papers that I wrote on is I do believe that we need to blend more science with experiential processes and to measure some experiences that we have from a phenomenological perspective and blend that in the science so that we can take these subjective experiences and see, because I do believe that some subjective experiences can give us empirical evidence.
And this gets back to the problem that everything is a subjective experience when you dial it all the way back to its core.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, we don't actually have objectivity. What we have is consensus.
Yeah, that's true.
A little bit different. So it all kind of opens us up for, you know, more a more open and less black and white sort of view of everything.
Absolutely. And I think that's important. I think it's important that we understand what the myths are surrounding this before we go on to really, you know, what's the realities of it and how it does actually happen, and realize that we're very powerful human beings. Our mind is incredibly powerful. It can play tricks on us just as much as anything else. And also there's this kind of social aspect to it, because socially we can be primed for a haunting. We
absolutely
just need to listen to stories, and then we get.
Yeah, and
hauntings.
We can be primed not to experience them. This works both
absolutely
ways.
In the same case. In the same case, we can actually prime for it. There's a lot to be said for people that say, "Well, my house is on some kind of burial land or some kind of land, and therefore, boom, the stories that go around the area. The minute you experience something, you think it's a haunting." Because you're primed socially because of that. You can also be primed socially because of tragedies that happen. Immediately when a tragedy happens, you think it's going to be haunted. Whereas there's going to be there's going to be this. And then before you know it, the stories create the hauntings. There's been stories. And there's been so many times where hauntings have been faked because there's a need for social connection. And I know for a fact that some cases that I've been called out on, and I know other people that I know have been called out on, I know for a fact that it's been dialed in because there's a need for social connection because they're disconnected. And so there's the potential, that's another potential problem that you have to investigate and look at, is what is the social factors surrounding this data?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the challenges of anything involving the paranormal when you're dealing with, you know, a lot of this are people's accounts of what happened, rather than being able to experience a lot of these vertical details for yourself. And then this gets into the gray area of what are the motivations, what is the ability of these people to talk objectively on this and all that sort of thing. And that all has to be weighed. And even if you did a perfect analysis, you can hand it to somebody else and they'll have a completely different take on it.
Same as that analogy. What you look at and what I look at, we might be looking at the same thing, but seeing different things.
Yeah. And truthfully, we don't really know, for example, whether you and I can look at a tree and see the same thing.
I see exactly what I mean. We're looking at a tree, we look at the same tree, but we see different things.
Yeah. We don't even know whether we're seeing different things. That's part of the challenge of it is we can both describe the tree exactly, but there's no way to know whether we're seeing it exactly the same.
I know that's fascinating, actually. And that's the same with a haunting, because what someone, or I don't want to say a haunting, because a perceived haunting or a perceived disturbance in the ether, if you like, what people are experiencing. Yeah. Because each and every one of them experiencing them, every experience is unique. Every experience is different.
Yeah. And just to add to that, and I'm going to beat this tree analogy absolutely into the ground here. But the thing of this, when we're both looking at these trees, is both of us carry cultural and personal attachments to looking at a tree. We have so many of our own ideas about trees that go along with looking at it that when we see it, our emotional landscape around that tree, that the things that we project onto seeing that tree, whether we're deriving comfort from it or whether we see it as lumber or whether we see this tree as a life-giving spiritual Mother Earth sort of force, we're all bringing our own interpretations, impressions, and emotions into that tree. And no two people are going to be exactly alike in doing that. And because of this, we're not seeing the same tree.
That's true, yeah. Because our experiences, our subjective experiences are unique and different.
Yep. Yep. And you could.
And that's the same with a haunting, though.
That's
a potential
exactly
haunting.
That's my point.
Yes. Yeah, that's because what people are experiencing is subjectively different to every. And I've seen cases where, not cases, I want to say I've seen some shows, TV shows, where they're in and everybody's experience is different. They may have some kind of pattern to it, maybe like, oh, I'm hearing this voice or something else and let's listen to it and everything else. But uniquely, everything is different. And that's the difficulty in trying to understand this phenomena, trying to measure this phenomena, is how unique it actually is and how we're actually perceiving it. How does one person perceive it? What is unique to them is not unique to another.
Yeah, exactly. So I think all of this has to be taken into account when you evaluate a paranormal experience that somebody has, whether it's a haunting or whether it's a poltergeist or whether it's another, that they're bringing their own cultural and personal baggage into it, and we are bringing our own, because nobody is truly objective there. So these things have to be taken into account. You know, we may be more objective, but there's always a gray area. We are all bringing in our own cultural and emotional baggage into everything that we examine.
And that's important. So, Craig, we've been going for an hour, and we'll round it off there. So we don't want to give the sweets away in the sweet shop. And I'll invite you, ladies and gentlemen, this is just the first of a long case of what we're going to be talking about. Today is just an introduction. We're talking about busting some myths of what hauntings are, that kind of thing. But join us in we on the next episode. We're going to be talking about mental health and hauntings, how hauntings actually occur, getting into poltergeist phenomena. This is a haunting series that we are doing now on Paranormal Daily News, And who knows, we might even bring some other experts in. I'm sure we'll get Lloyd in to maybe help us and talk to us about some stuff as well. But do join us again as we bring up more. And if you've got any questions, then, you know, get on to paranormaldailynews.com and send us your questions, anything you want to know. There's a lot of myths surrounding hauntings. Just remember, most hauntings can be scientifically validated as not being a haunting and have a natural explanation. But we are going to get into some cases where there is no explanation. And also, from my good friend and colleague here, final thoughts on hauntings, construction, and the mind.
We're going to throw construction in here. Okay. So when you're talking about hauntings and you're talking about houses, houses are in their own ways almost like living things, in that they start out new, they age, they change, people add things to them, people take stuff away from them, and they have their own personalities, and they are a player in the game, so to speak, that you're putting your energy in. I, for example, built the house I'm living in. So
nice. This is,
yeah. So
I'd love to say the same thing, but no.
So this is how I look at it. You know, houses, they have personalities, and I think I can leave it at that.
Awesome. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us. We've been over an hour. We are delighted that you can come and join us again. Again, ask any questions, paranormaldailynews.com. The next session, we're going to be going into maybe how hauntings occur, real hauntings occur, and maybe talk more about the particular types of hauntings. So, again, this is just the beginning of a series that we're going to cover some information. So please join us once again. Thank you for being with us. This is Deadly Departed. I'm Jock. That is my good friend, Craig. And we are signing off. God bless.